south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
And now, from the Gringo Advantage Can Be Used for Evil department. So today we've got some tips and things to beware of. Yes, I gotta say, the Gringo Advantage can be used for evil. You'll find that out soon enough if you move to one of the gringo tourist spots like Costa Rica, Cancun, well, most anywhere on the gringo tourist trail, especially if you don't speak Spanish. So how can that be? Because, you know, if you're on the gringo tourist trail and you don't speak Spanish, gringos who do have the gringo advantage over you, and often you'll try to pal up with or glom onto one or two of them because they'll help you maneuver your way through the non-English speaking minefield. You know, on the gringo tourist trail, there are gringos who speak Spanish who would like to get you dependent on them. But, you know, everything comes at a cost. There's a price to pay for that. I see it all the time with fresh green gringos. It's a little nuts how some of them put an inordinate amount of trust in someone they just met, just because he speaks Spanish and they don't. Yep, I've seen it happen with newly arrived fresh green gringos who, all of a sudden, have a new best friend. You know, if someone were to break this down mathematically, I'd say when you're on the gringo tourist trail, your greatest danger of getting screwed or gouged comes from other gringos who speak Spanish, not the locals who speak English. And normally, when gringos get ripped off or gouged by other gringos, when it's done and they've realized it, they get no satisfaction. By the way, that's one of the things that makes a fresh green gringo turn tail and go back home. Though it depends on how many of his feathers have been plucked and how early in the game, too. Look, what are you going to do? Go to the cops and tell them you've been ripped off by another gringo? They're going to laugh at you. Besides that, if you take someone to court, everything's going to be in Spanish, so you'll have to get a translator and a Latin lawyer. Yep, you could get a Latino lawyer and go for it. But you have heard me talk about the legal process here in Latin America. It sometimes takes years. That's why it's very unlikely for someone to get sued, which is a good thing, right? And if somehow you really get gouged for thousands and thousands, and you do end up going to court against a gringo, if it becomes a big enough problem for the guy that ripped you off, it's easy enough for him to just move to the adjacent country, the country next door. Then he's off the hook because he's out of the jurisdiction of the country where he committed the crime. I'm talking about non-violent crimes now. Funny enough, though, I've talked to enough gringos who've been ripped off by other gringos to know even that a gringo fleeing the country because he thinks he'll lose in court rarely happens. That means you could be walking down the street well after the fact, well after some gringo gouged you, and run into that same guy or see him in a cafe right in your neighborhood. You can be in the presence of the guy that ripped you off in the very same restaurant. You might be standing in the same line with him at McDonald's or Starbucks. You might want to kill him, but you won't do that because you don't want to go to prison in a third world country. Not good. Which reminds me of one of my expat gringo buddies once said to me when some green gringo at a bar asked him why he'd left the United States, why he'd gotten out of Dodge and would never go back. His answer was simple. He said, "The United States is just not big enough for me and all of my ex-wives." Now, imagine that situation is shrunk down to a very small country like Uruguay. You get ripped off there by some gringo. You can't go after him, or if you go to court, you can't win because the legal system is so flawed. Knowing that, you're always going to harbor resentment against that guy. And when you see him, you're going to boil with rage because he got the best of you. And that phrase, out of sight, out of mind, won't apply because he'll be most likely hanging out in the same districts you are. Though if you have a good lawyer, he might know a guy who knows a guy. Just saying. Speaking of gringos using their gringo advantage to do wrong, I'm sure you've heard me mention in a previous show that every so often I read in the Latin news services or online newspapers of gringo fraudsters and con men with fake professional credentials getting caught and then extradited back to the States. It's a funny thing, too, that most of these guys that do get caught, when their background has been investigated, you find out they escaped the United States because there were fraudsters up there, too. So from what I can see, the gringo fraudsters you encounter most exclusively on the gringo tourist trail did not suddenly learn how to screw people once they got down to Latin America and discovered they had the gringo advantage. Nope, that's almost never the case. They're generally career con men who did much of the same thing back in the States. And they found when they escaped to Latin America they could start with an easy group of marks, gullible, green expat gringos. And as far as their previously blackened and tarnished reputations, they could start fresh once they hit Latin America, a clean slate. Now, admittedly, many gringos and expats here in Latin America aren't running from anything at all, but obviously seem to have a big line of bullshit. They're not necessarily out to scam you, just to make you think they're a little bit bigger and more important than they really are. It seems to be a natural defect in humanity that people like to impress, like to pump up their resumes. For example, you know the statistics say on those dating sites like Tinder, most men exaggerate their incomes, education, and height, and most women understate their age and their weight. Now, as far as gringo expat bullshitters here in Latin America, you find, at least I've found, that gringas, expat ladies, have little to bullshit about. They don't play that game. They're pretty honest with you, at least in person. Except maybe about the age thing. But I gotta say, my bullshit detector goes off quite a bit when talking to gringos and expats I've just met or haven't known for a while. Seems to be a guy thing. It also seems to me there's a certain percentage of gringos and expats who arrive down here who have a kind of a self-esteem problem. So they pump themselves up when you talk to them. That's why guys like me and so many other long-term expats have our bullshit detectors set on high. Oh, and here's a good example. About a week or two ago, a Latino real estate guy came over to my place with a couple of clients. And by coincidence, one of those guys just happened to be a gringo from Florida who'd lived in Latin America for 10 years, a guy I'd see quite often on my power walk route. I'd see him all the time sitting outside in a garden restaurant, and I'd sit down, have a cup of coffee with him. Now, you know, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, you don't see many gringos at all. And when you spot one, or they spot you, especially if it's happened repeatedly, when you see the same person over and over again, you realize he's not a tourist. He's living down here. You eventually say, hi, how's it going, how'd you end up down here, and all that. You go back and forth with all the usual suspect questions. The usual gringo banter. And if he's a sensitive Me Too wokester, you drop him like a hot turd. So anyway, this real estate guy comes in with a couple people. One of them is this gringo I've been sitting down having coffee and pastries with off and on for 2 years. Same time, same station, same garden restaurant by the Central Park. It's the only place I've ever seen the guy, but we sit and talk for a few minutes every time we run into each other. So anyway, I give him a little tour through the place. I show him my 29 solar panels and 2 Tesla power walls, solar hot water heater, rainwater collection system, my little radio and podcast studio, etc., etc. And the guy looks at me wide-eyed and he says, Johnny, you weren't bullshitting me. He said, I've been down here 10 years now. Almost all the gringos I meet down here seem to be full of bullshit. And you've proved to be the exception to that rule. So you get it, right? All that time we were sitting down having coffee and such, and we were discussing solar power, getting off the grid, getting self-sufficient, and he talking about what he did for a living and what he does in his spare time, and me the same. Yet all the while he thought parts of it were BS, and I had my doubts about his story too. You see, both of us had our BS detectors dialed up to 10 because both of us have been around a long, long time here in Latin America. And we know how certain people like to turn their mundane life stories into something more interesting and enviable. Believe me, over the years, I've heard some real tall, tall tales coming from gringos and expats and tourists. And who knows, they might not be tall tales, so you just give them the benefit of the doubt. You roll with it, because you might never see that guy again. But back to those stories of gringos who will gouge and swindle you. I mentioned earlier that every once in a while, more than every once in a while, a gringo's picked up for some kind of fraud, and it's found that he's also wanted in the States for pretty much the same thing, so he gets extradited. For example, just last week came the story of a fake expat doctor who was arrested in Ecuador and faces extradition to the U.S. because he pushed miracle cures for COVID and tinfoil hat cures to counteract the deleterious effects of chemtrails. Turns out all the victims he scammed with devices that were supposed to block chemtrails, all of the victims he scammed were gringos and expats. Makes sense. I personally have never met a Latina or Latino in my life who knew what a chemtrail was. It's not on their radar. It's not even in their dictionary. I once tried to explain it to a bunch of Latinos at a party, and man, they thought it was a joke. They thought I was making it up. Anyway, this article goes on to say, the national police in Ecuador have arrested a U.S. citizen wanted for impersonating a medical doctor and selling unlicensed products. The 62-year-old man, identified as Lawrence Castor was taken into custody Thursday. According to a statement released by prosecutors, he's also wanted for posing as an evangelical minister in the U.S. and collecting millions of dollars in a scam called Your Direct Line to God. Prosecutors claim Lawrence Castor went by several names in Ecuador. And get this, neighbors in his Palermo apartment complex said he operated a colonic cleansing clinic out of his apartment. U.S. attorney's offices in Medford, Oregon report that Castor is wanted on several charges, including impersonating a physician and selling unlicensed products and services in that state. It says in Ashland, Oregon, where he lived until he moved to Ecuador in 2018, Castor was charged with injuring a woman during a colonic irrigation using what he claimed was holy water from the River Jordan, with the lab analysis showing the cleansing agent was actually a mixture of Red Bull energy drink, household bleach, and an opioid solution. Ouch. Then it says, according to U.S. Attorney John Tillison, Castor faces fraud charges for offering thousands of religious subscribers a direct communication with God. He's believed to have defrauded people out of at least $3 million. Tillison added that Castor is also under investigation in at least four other states besides Oregon. The article goes on to say that in 2021, Lawrence Castor held at least two seminars in Vilcabamba, selling devices he claimed would protect wearers from COVID-19 infections and chemtrails. The devices consisted of a Velcro band lined with lead film and magnets that he sold for $50. It says the neighbors in the Palermo complex said Lawrence Castor was quiet and courteous and kept to himself. Though some neighbors complained to management on occasion about a foul odor coming from Castor's apartment, likely related to his colonic irrigation treatments. Isn't it funny? It seems like every time the cops catch a cracked weirdo, the neighbors say he was quiet, courteous, and kept to himself. How often have we heard that from the neighbors after a guy's been caught with 12 people chained up in his basement? Anyway, that's why I always say if you get nicked or gouged by another gringo, whether for $5,000 or $50, I know it hurts, but it's a good lesson to learn. Because I know there are some expat gringos out there who have been nicked for a lot more than that, into the hundreds of thousands. And it's usually on a land or investment deal. You know those teak and pineapple plantation projects presented to gringos in English blogs, blurbs, and English language tourist rags? You've got to keep away from that stuff. The thing is, though, somehow, you take a very astute, bright, industrious gringo who's made money and is very successful up in the States. You bring him down to a tourist area like Costa Rica or Cancun. Somehow, when he gets off the plane and that tropical air hits his face and those rose-colored glasses kick in, something strange happens and those sharp minds and business skills fall along the wayside. And somehow, there's always that deal that you gotta act on right now or it'll get away. That's why I always say to gringos and expats who whine and complain how they've been scammed out of $2,000, $3,000, or even $5,000, let's say. It hurts all right, but it's a cheap lesson learned. In fact, I nearly got skinned for $20,000 in Costa Rica. It's a pretty interesting story, and here's how it went down. One day, I was sitting in my lawyer's office, my good lawyer in Costa Rica. You remember I mentioned in a past show, when I first picked up a lawyer in Costa Rica, he said, "I'm a very honest lawyer." In fact, he was a professor of law at the university. He was also a soft-hearted guy who'd written two books of poetry that had been published. Not to mention, he was the last person in Costa Rica to have been struck down with polio, so he walked with a gimp. But on the other hand, his dad was mega rich and owned a gigantic teak plantation, so he had a hell of a safety net. Oh, and just as an aside, like we haven't been having lots of asides today here, he came right out and told me he married the wrong woman. An upper-class Costa Rican Latina, because, well, he was upper-class himself, and they tend to marry their own, right? Who, he said, was an absolute gringa wannabe. And I guess that's where I first heard that term from him many years ago. Gringa wannabe. He said she just loved flying up to Miami 3-4 times a year to go shopping. So as much money as this guy had, he said she spent it all. He had no savings. But he was set to come into the family money, the teak plantation money, when his dad passed. He worried about that. Once he got the family fortune, what his wife was going to do with it. She was a bottomless money pit, he said. I knew her. She wore the pants, and man, did she dominate him. Yep, and she went to all the helicopter schools and spoke pretty good English. And I remember every time she'd come around, she'd tell me how wonderful the United States was. And how their three kids, although she allowed them to go to grade school and high school in Costa Rica, helicopter schools, of course. She was going to send them to university up in the States. And you know what that would cost. Anyway, it seemed to me that she felt she had done her husband a favor because she could get any guy. She was good looking and upper class, and she'd married a guy, although his family had money, he had some obvious defects. He just wasn't that handsome and had a gimpy leg. So that was the setup. That was what he married into. He also told me she went on lots of trips to the United States alone. And through him, my first good lawyer in Costa Rica, I learned all about upper class Latinas. And why, as far as my experience, I've never seen a love match work out between a gringo and an upscale Latina from a wealthy family. Problem is, you see, when their parents have money, they're taken care of and pampered all their lives. They get everything handed to them. And though, personality-wise, they may be very nice young ladies. You want to talk about high maintenance, man, I could tell you stories. By the way, I've never met an upscale Latina who wasn't enamored with the United States, who didn't have as her goal to own an apartment in Miami. Preferably South Beach, of course. I know, I'm going to get accused of generalizing here, but so far none of my gringo friends who've gone out with upscale Latinas have ever proven me wrong. In fact, a couple of my gringo buddies who got very serious with Latinas whose parents had dough, they told me in the end they were lucky to break it off because they realized that it was daddy, the patriarch of the family, the guy who had all the wealth and controlled it. He was the guy that set the rules and made all the decisions. You could marry his daughter, but she was still always under his thumb, and by association, you were too, well, at least until he died. But I digress as usual. Back to that situation I mentioned before where I almost lost 20 G's, but didn't, through dumb luck and by the skin of my teeth. So anyway, my good Costa Rican lawyer, I say good because he told me when I first hooked up with him, he wouldn't do anything illegal or sketchy, but he had another lawyer friend on the side who would when necessary. And yes, the time did come when that was necessary. Anyway, one day I was sitting in his office and he said, you know, Johnny, I have lots of Latino clients who are cash poor and land rich. And he said, you know, if you've got an extra $20,000 in cash laying around and you want to put it to work, I can get you 5% interest a month. Do the math on that and you'll know it's around 60% on your money per year. And I said, yeah, right. What's the hitch? Since back then on a U.S. dollar CD, you could put 50 or 100 grand in one of the local banks and get 10% a year. But 60%, that was too good to be true. You know what they say about things that are too good to be true? But I was a greenhorn, and I said, tell me more. He said, don't worry, it's not an unsecured loan. I make sure to get hipotecas or mortgages on their properties, and then if they don't pay after about 3 months or so, we go to court and you get the property. He said, I'm a lawyer, so I make sure all the paperwork's right, and you do get the property. In fact, he said, a guy right down the street, I know him. He's got a little storefront in a commercial building. It's worth at least $30,000, and he said, I can get that property as collateral if you lend him 20 grand. I know him, he said. He's always been a decent guy. So I did it. I signed the paperwork, handed over the 20 grand, and sure enough, the guy paid me 5% every month. Paid it directly to my lawyer. It was better that way, besides the fact that they were acquaintances. So if there ever was a problem, I know he could get the money out of the guy better than I ever could. So anyway, in the first year, the guy paid like clockwork, 5% every month. In the second year, he'd miss a month or two or three and then catch up again. And in the third year, he stopped paying. Turns out he was getting divorced and his wife locked up his bank account. So I had a meeting with my lawyer. We decided to give him 3 more months and then go after his property. Seemed simple enough. And then I got a call from my lawyer about a month later. He said, we can get the property all right, the storefront, but he hasn't paid the property taxes in 20 years. With all the penalties, etc., that works out to around 10 grand. Turns out the property taxes on the place were something like $300 a year. So anyway, the lawyer said, in order for us to get possession of that property, I have to pony up the 10 grand property tax that was in arrears. Which to me still didn't seem like a terrible deal because the place was worth $30,000 or $40,000. However, he and his wife were fighting over the divorce settlement, and part of it was that property. And that, my lawyer said, could drag on for years, and that would hold up the title, and the property taxes would keep accumulating. The good news was, in those 2 years, the guy did pay his payments. I'd received about the amount of 20K, exactly what I'd lent the guy. So I broke even by the skin of my teeth. Lesson learned again, right? And that lesson, more or less, is this. If a guy wants to borrow money from you, even if he's got land or property to put up as collateral, if his credit is such that he can't get a mortgage or loan at the bank, Why would you be so stupid as to lend that guy money when the bank won't? If the bank's credit experts won't qualify him, what makes you think you know better? Now, in the end, I should have been really mad at my lawyer, right, for putting this deal together. But I wasn't, because, like I said before, I was a green gringo, and those interest rates, man, did they look enticing. Everyone wants something for nothing, and they don't consider if it looks too good to be true, because, you see, the people proposing it to you, especially if they're professionals like a lawyer, can get around that argument by saying, hey, you're in Costa Rica or Belize now, whatever. You're not in Kansas anymore. Things are different down here, and you fall for that sometimes, especially when you arrive as a green gringo and you've got those rose-colored glasses on. It takes a good 6 months to start seeing things as they really are. Sometimes a lot longer than that. So as for me, looking back on that episode, it was just dumb luck that I broke even and didn't lose a lot more than that. If the guy quit paying after just 1 year, I'd have been in the hole big time. And I'd have been forever pissed off at the lawyer who got me into it. That's one of the big problems with being a gringo or expat on the gringo tourist trail. Everyone thinks you've got dough to spare, so they spring all kinds of ideas on you, and some of them are pretty hard to resist. But back to that seemingly nutty business of the guy owning 20 years in back taxes on the plate. That would never happen back in the States. You quit paying your taxes for 2 years, the county will put your place up for auction. But here in Latin America, they just don't do that. They haven't got anybody to enforce those kind of rules. They'll never come out to your house and knock on your door, say, oh, 10 years in back taxes. No. They'll keep adding old tax bills to new along with some penalties. And if there's ever a sale or the title changes hands, that's when someone's going to have to fork up the dough, or they won't issue a new title. All right, been getting a lot of inquiries lately about how my brother has been doing since his stem cell treatment, which finished around 2.5 months ago. You know, to recap this a bit, my brother is kind of the poster child for stem cell treatments. He's in his late 50s, he's 50 pounds overweight, he's got high blood pressure, arthritis, vertigo, night sweats, night terrors, occasional depression, high cholesterol, a skin condition similar to shingles, but it's not. He's had 5 or 6 surgeries because he had many injuries as a hockey player in his early days. And he went to the stem cell clinic basically because doctors were telling him he would need 2 shoulder replacements and a knee replacement, like now. And he's awful depressed because he's got a certain kind of arthritis. When it goes untreated, he develops all kinds of itchy red patches on his legs and arms. Something like psoriasis, but it's not. So every 2 months, he's got to go get this injection of a toxic substance that they use for chemotherapy, but it seems to suppress that particular kind of arthritis. I never even heard of that problem until my brother told me he had it. Anyway, my brother came down with all these bottles of pills, 21 prescription medications. And on the first day, the doctors immediately knocked him down to around half, about 12 prescriptions. And then he went through a 3-week detox, including chelation, ozone treatments, high doses of vitamin C and other vitamins and minerals. And then at the end of all that, he got 300 million stem cells by IV and 3 other injections of 25 million stem cells, 1 in each shoulder joint and 25 million in his bad knee. And now, 2.5 months later, here's what he tells me. For years, he said, he had to take oxycodone every night because he couldn't find a position to sleep without pain. He had such night pain in both shoulders, he couldn't go to sleep without oxycodone. And now, 2 months later, he says he doesn't need the oxy anymore. He can go to sleep without pain. First time in years. And as far as his bad knee, he says he can walk on it. After a while, it hurts, but not like before. Before, every 2 blocks, he'd have to sit down and rest. Now, he says he can keep on walking. It's not perfect, he said, but much better than before. But the thing he's most happy about is he hasn't gone back for those arthritis shots. He waited and waited, and nothing happened. The arthritis did not return, neither did those red spots on his arms and legs. And then, get this, just the other day he called me up and he says, guess what? You're not going to believe this, but there's hair growing back on my head. My brother's one of those guys who has the monk look, you know, 3/4 bald, and he says his hair's growing back. Anyway, that's the report 2.5 months after my brother's stem cells. We'll give you another update 2 or 3 months from now. And for all you guys and gals who've been writing me about that stem cell clinic in the DR, it's set up now so that there's an English-speaking person that can walk you through the whole thing and set you up for the whole trip. Because, you see, that's what it was lacking before. When I went there with my brother, there were no gringo or expat patients at all. They were all Spanish-speaking Latinos. Now, of course, I hooked up my brother and a couple of other expat insider seminar attendees. They've been through the clinic. And though I'm not personally involved with this, I know the doctors, the staff, and an English-speaking handholder, so I can hook you up. So will it work for you? I'll tell you what I'm 100% sure of. If my doctor said I needed a knee, shoulder, or hip prosthetic replacement, I would definitely give stem cells a try first. And I think it's an absolute tragedy when a person up in the States says, I'm going to get the knee replacement because my insurance is going to pay for it. Man, that's a major surgery and not without risk. Besides that, you'll never have complete joint mobility in that area again. Sure, when it all heals up, you'll be without pain. That's the point. But did you ever see what that looks like after it's healed? Well, it's like what Dr. Frankenstein said about his creation. He ain't pretty, but he gets around. So I don't know about you, but as for me, I'll definitely go for the stem cells first. And as for the plastic and titanium, that would be plan B. And finally, according to the 2021 ranking of the world's 50 most violent cities, for all of you who insist Mexico is the place to be, guess what? The top 8 of the 50 most violent cities in the world are in Mexico. In other words, Mexico gets the gold medal for the sheer number of most dangerous cities in the world. Now, according to this report, you can have a copy by sending me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. It says, quote, Mexico has been the world epicenter of urban homicide violence for the last 3 years. And that's without considering the thousands of people that have just disappeared. And get this, according to the study, as of December 2021, Cancun was among Mexican cities where citizens felt most insecure. As for local residents there, 85.5% of them said they don't feel at all secure living in Cancun. That, according to the National Urban Public Security Survey published by the National Institute of Statistics. Now, get this. It says, a notable feature of the most violent cities list was the continuing absence of El Salvador and Guatemala. Neither of those countries has a city that appears on the 50 most violent cities list. The only two Central American cities to appear on that list were Tegucigalpa and San Pedro Sula, the two most populated cities in Honduras. By the way, 4 Colombian cities appeared on that list. And for all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes who might be thinking about moving to Brazil as your plan B, there are 9 Brazilian cities on the top 50 most violent cities in the world list. 9 cities.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long expat insider seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.